for those who are struggling with in that area. You know, if we just, you know, we have this longing to be held and to be nurtured and to be loved, and you know what? A warm body feels good next to us, and so we satisfy ourselves. But it never really brings satisfaction. We still stay thirsty, even in the good relationships of our lives. Forget the bad relationships. Even in the really good relationships of our lives, we can't find satisfaction. You know, can't get no satisfaction, somebody said a long time ago. See, notice only the really old guys laugh at that. All the young guys, what? Yeah, Tom, you, I'm talking about you, man. Well, actually, Tom can't remember back when they said that. Anyway, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. No cheap shots at Tom, I'm sorry. But it's so obvious and easy. We do have that, even in our best moments, even in our good moments, we find that what we have here doesn't satisfy. Jesus comes, God comes and says, come all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. Then he says, you who have no money. In other words, those of you who do not have the resources to provide for your own satisfaction. Guess who that is? That's all of us. None of us have all of the resources that we need to provide for our own satisfaction. If we did, we would, and we wouldn't need to hear this invitation. We would just be satisfied. If drugs really did it, we'd take drugs. If sex really did it, well, this would be a whole different church than it is now. if I could get recognition from you all, I wouldn't need God. If it really did satisfy, then I wouldn't need God. The truth is, it doesn't, and it won't, and it can't. He says, come by and eat. In other words, take what you don't have. You don't have the resources. So you take his resources, his stuff, his invitation, and you use that to buy what you do not have. You buy what? Wine and milk. Symbols of good things. Symbols of things that did satisfy. For Israel, that's why they were looking forward to going to Canaan. That's why they were looking forward to this land of paradise. They were in slavery in Egypt. Egypt was a hideous place. The taskmasters were beating them, hurting them, causing them pain and suffering and struggle. God saw their plight. He had compassion on them. Pity on them. He took them out. He walked them through a wilderness. Because of their obstinance, by the way, they spent a whole lot longer than they had to in there. I mean, it was a couple weeks journey, basically, and they spent 40 years there in the desert because they wouldn't listen. But their longing, their desire was for this new land that was flowing with milk and honey, that had good things. That's what they were looking forward to. And that's what God offers. That's what God offers us. And so we say, well, you whippy fist, you who find me good, I am so glad. If I just do this thing, then I'll get what I want. Then I'll have home, happiness, you know, feelings of being high, whatever it is, but I'll have it all in a good way. If I just do the right things now, you know, notice how quick we get to that? If I start doing the right thing now, then I'll get all stuff. God says you got nothing. You can't make bargains with God because you got nothing to trade, which is what we're always doing. God, if you just give me this, then I'll. You know what? Just excise that whole statement from your vocabulary. Never, ever say it again. Because it's foolish. If you give me this, then I'll. You got nothing to offer. You have nothing to bargain with. You can't go to the bargaining table empty-handed. And yet that's exactly what God says to do. He says, come anyway. Come to the bargaining table and come empty-handed. And then he kind of chastises and he says, why do you spend money on what is not bread? And your labor on what does not satisfy? Why are you working so hard to get what doesn't bring you any satisfaction? You know, there's some real joy in being old. Right? Right, Tom? There really is. There's some great joy in being 50. Now, one of the cool things about being 50 is you suddenly realize that all the things that you thought would bring satisfaction just don't. All the things that you thought you had to have, fondue pots notwithstanding. Sorry, if you weren't here last week, we talked about fondue pots. You discover that there's a whole lot of things that you can do without, that you thought you had to have, that if you didn't have them, you would just die. Well, you don't, and you don't. You just think you will. You just think you have to have this stuff, and then when you discover you don't, and you never did, and you're not going to, it's not so bad. Matter of fact, it's kind of a relief sometimes to not be pursuing stuff or relationship or good feelings or highs or whatever it is you're pursuing. You discover that some of those things that you thought you would die without, you just simply won't die without. You won't. Your brain says you will. But you discover when you're old that that was just a lie. And you spent a whole lot of time, as I did, because I was a really slow learner, I spent a lot of time pursuing wealth, only to discover that wealth did not purchase that which I thought it would. It did not make me happier, did not give me good feelings. See, if wealth actually brought you happiness, then the foothills would be the happiest place. You would hear people clapping and doing cartwheels all day long in the foothills, but you don't. Matter of fact, the saddest, most miserable people live in the foothills. So that which they pursued, they discover, unfortunately, does not bring that which they thought it would bring, and it causes them great pain. So not only do you not spend your money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy, listen to me and eat what is good and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. What God calls us to is to eat what is good. What is good? What is the richest of fare? In verse 3 it says, give ear and come to me, hear me, that your soul may live. It's not going to be found outside of a relationship with God. For those of you who think it might. God's saying, no, come hear me, so that your soul will live, be vitalized, revitalized, given life. And what does God say? Not only do you hear me, he says, you know what? I've made a promise. I made a promise of my love. I promised it to David, and now I'm going to continue in that promise. So we can look to how God treated Moses. Or Moses. Wow, where did that come from? David. We can look how God treated David. We did that. As we preached through Samuel, 1 Samuel, we saw how God was just with David. Over and over again, time and time again, God took care of him, provided for him, walked with him, watched over him, you know, extricated him from some really tough situations, some really scary things. God was with him. And even when he went through the hard times, and he did, face it, even when he went through some really, really, really hideous times, the presence of God was with him in those times. David is a witness. We heard that. We saw that. And God says, not only is this calling for his favorite people, these people that he's been talking to, Jerusalem, the city, Zion, his people, the Jews, his very special people. He's saying, no, it's for other nations too. It's for everybody. So when Jesus says, come, you who are thirsty, he's not just saying that to the Jewish people, those precious people, those direct descendants of David. No, he's saying that to you and me, to all of those of us who aren't Jewish and don't know even how to be. He's saying it to us also. Because the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has endowed you with splendor, he used his people to show us the way to Jesus. And then he says in verse 6, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call on him while he is near. Seek the Lord while he may be found. There's a time frame on what we do. There's a time frame. Seek the Lord while he may be found, which means that there comes this time when he's not. It's you can always tell when you've completely lost your audience. And then the question is how do you get them back? And one of the primary ways is to throw Benji out. No. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call on him while he is near. In other words, in those moments of desperation, in those moments of thirst and hunger, that's the time to go looking and searching and grabbing onto and finding and pursuing God. It's not the time to run from him. And isn't it often the time when we run from him? Why do we run away? Because we're ashamed? See, grace is tough. God's grace is tough because of our shame. Because we are so ashamed of what we do and who we really are and what we really think. We have that deep level of shame, and it makes it hard for us to turn to God. Whenever people are in trouble, what's our tendency? It's to run and hide. It's what I do. I don't want Eric to see my sin again. I don't want to go to the Seneca House at leadership meeting and have to talk about my struggle again. So I hide it, or I pretend it's not real, or I just avoid the conversation. You know, when you have your particular area where you screw up all the time, and when that conversation comes up in public, how you suddenly find something to do in the other room? You know, that's kind of that shame that goes with all of us, you know. People start talking about mismanagement of money. Okay, I got to go find another place to be. You know, I can't be here anymore. This is ugly. You know, people start talking about the importance of right relationships, godly relationships, Christian marriage, those kinds of things. I don't want to hear that. Yuck. You know, that's scary. That hits too close to home. So what do? We hide, we run, we avoid the conversation. But it's in that time that God says, come. Because that's when we're thirsty. That's when we're hungry. That's when we're dying. That's when God says to come. God doesn't say that we can come when we got it all together. Not that we do. But he doesn't say, okay, come to me when you got it right. He says, come to me now. I can be found close to you when you're in need. I come near you when you're in desperate places. He does say, let the wicked forsake his way and the evil man his thoughts. Let him turn to the Lord and he will have mercy on him, and to our God, for he will freely pardon. That's the worst part about grace. See, when I do sin, I want to get punished for it. So I beat myself up. If God won't do it and you won't do it, I'll beat myself up. And so I walk around with a stick, you know, hitting myself and beating myself into a pulp. And we all do that. We sit here and beat ourselves up because we see these places in our lives where we really suck. I mean, where we really suck. And we beat ourselves up, and we just keep beating and beating and beating ourselves in that little area. That's where, you know, somehow if I just hit myself hard enough, then I'll feel okay. God has mercy and he freely pardons. He says everything you do is truly, truly bad. It's evil, it stinks, it's awful, I hate it. And I forgive you. What I said to Pete was truly awful. And he forgave me. And I wanted him to hit me, hurt me, cause me pain, make me struggle, kick me to the curb for the rest of my life. Every time I would see his smiling, glowing, wonderful face, I would feel bad. Because I wanted him to hurt me. And instead, he freely pardoned. It's a gift. For those of you who have nothing, it's a gift. For those of you who don't want to receive it, it's a gift. You're stuck with it. You don't barter with him. He doesn't sell it to you. He doesn't give it to you so that you will live a good life. Oh, you may live a wonderful life in response to what he's given. That's cool. Some of you have done that. Some of you are doing that. You live out of this amazing response to God's love, and you say, that's, yeah, I am free now. I feel free. I am free. The burden fell off. Finally, I understood Pete's great love for me, and the burden fell off, and our relationship changed and became wonderful and rich and beautiful. It became everything that I hoped a relationship could be. It finally became that which I wanted the relationship to be. And I could live comfortably and happily. And I could go to Pete and I could honor him and he could honor me because he forgave what I had done. When we hear those words from God, he freely pardons, it's over. We're okay. We're as if we never sinned. Do you really get the impact of that? We're as if we never sinned. See, I carry those sins around me. I have my little list of the things that God could not possibly have forgiven me for. And those are the things that he did. Those are the things that he forgave me for. Absolutely those things that I cannot forgive myself for. That's what he said. Yep, I forgive that. Those words I said, those things I've done, ugh. Those things I want to take back and can't, it's too late. Those are the ones. Why can God do this? Because his thoughts are not our thoughts. His ways are not our ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, God says, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. That's what I love about him. He doesn't think like I think. He doesn't keep accounts like I keep account. He doesn't keep records like I keep records. He pardons freely because he's not like me. There's a great joy in being forgiven, and most of you who know me know that my deepest love in a movie, you know, my number one movie of all time is this movie, O Brother, Where Art Thou? And I just love this scene that transpires here just because it is so rich in that which we are forgiven for. Let's just watch it for fun.
Kind of a congregation. Emerson Gopher.
No, thank you, dumb. A third of a gopher had only aroused my appetite without bedding her back down.
Oh, you could have the whole thing. Me and Pete already had one. We ran across a whole gopher. Yeah.
place to chunk. Everybody's looking for answers.
Don't you love that? Come on in, the water's fine. That's it. You're thirsty. Doesn't matter if you've got it together. Doesn't matter what you hold. Doesn't matter what stuff you have. Doesn't matter what you've done. If you're thirsty, if you're hungry, come to the water. Come buy, eat, buy wine, milk. That's what he calls us to do. That's what he begs us to do. That's what he wants from us. Some of you are thirsty. Some of you are really hungry. I remember when Eric said we should all go on a fast. And that's about the closest to hunger I've really ever gotten to is when I'm fasting. And Eric was talking, Dan asked Eric about this fast thing. Dan was just part of our group then, just starting. And Eric said, well, you know, you take 3 days and you just go without food. That's one way to do it. And he was using that as a suggestion or as one example. So Dan said, okay, I'll fast for 3 days. And so he did. I mean, he didn't say that. So then he came back to Eric, and he was like reporting in to Eric about what he had learned in this fast and fasting for 3 days and how hungry he got and how horrible it was. And Eric said, you fasted for 3 days? I've never fasted for more than a day. What are you doing? Dan got really hungry in that time. Some of you are really hungry, and you're really thirsty. You can't earn what's free. Let's pray. Father, for those of us who hunger, for those of us who thirst, for those of us who are dying of thirst, dying of hunger, in our brokenness, in our screwed up relationships, in our pursuit of the things that don't satisfy, we just don't hardly hear your voice, let alone believe you when you say come. So Father, my prayer is that each person here this week would hear your voice and take you up on your offer. And pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Over the next few moments, we have several ways in which we can respond. Dave suggested that the two wingback chairs are actually the two new sinner's chairs, but they're already occupied by apparent sinners.